Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media here in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your co-host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Perhaps some of you have never visited a hospital emergency room, especially at night. And if that's the case, you've fortunately missed what can be a very eye-opening experience. And as I thought about today's program, I said, that's actually one very good reason why I think we need a pediatric emergency care center. Providence, Alaska Medical Center has recently opened the Providence Children's Emergency Care Unit, and our guest today, Dr. Sandra Horning, the medical director of the new unit, and child life specialist Holly Legere, are here today to discuss other reasons why an emergency unit dedicated to children is an important idea and to let us know more about the facility. Holly and Dr. Horning, welcome to Line One.
Thank you.
I think this is the first time for both of you.
It is. Yes.
If you're listening today and you come up with some questions or comments you want to make, let me give you, our listeners, a couple of ways to get a hold of us. Our local number in Anchorage is 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752, and you can always email us during the next hour or so at line1. You'll have to spell that out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, line1 at alaskapublic.org. Holly and Dr. Horning, let's start by just have you guys introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourselves and your training. And Holly, I'm sure listeners, many of them are not aware of what a child life specialist is, so you're going to have to bring us up to date on that training and what you do.
Sure. I am Holly Legere. I'm a child life specialist in the emergency room at the new Children's Emergency Care Unit. I have an undergrad degree in psychology and a master's in child life specifically. I'm originally from Maine. I studied in Boston for a while and worked down there for a little bit. Child life itself is tailored toward helping families navigate the hospital experience. We really work closely with children when they come in. There can be a lot of anxiety-inducing aspects to the hospital environment. When kids go into a doctor's office, it can be scary enough. And when you go into the emergency room, there's a whole lot of other things on the wall that look scary. And when that heightens a child's anxiety, they may show behaviors like crying, fussiness, that make it hard for us to care for them in that environment. So my job is really to help explain everything that's going on, make it understandable for a pediatric patient and for their family, hopefully reduce some of that anxiety and help them get the treatment they need.
Okay, thanks very much. And Dr. Horning, tell us about your training and experience.
So I'm Dr. Sandra Horning, and I have training in pediatrics and emergency medicine. I did some training at the University of Colorado and the University of Washington. So pediatrics is my first love, and emergency medicine is my second love, and combining the two of them is perfect for me. I love my job. I have worked at Seattle Children's Hospital in their emergency department as an attending physician, and I helped to start a pediatric emergency program in Spokane, Washington, and another Providence hospital.
So what I'd like to do is let's start by just kind of talking about generic emergency rooms and then work our way down to pediatric specific units and why they exist and what the purpose is. So if I were to ask you what is the major reason an emergency room exists, you would say...
The main reason an emergency room exists is to take care of critically ill people and critically injured people.
And is that what emergency rooms do primarily?
So emergency rooms now do a lot more than just take care of critically ill patients. We become what we call sometimes the safety net for the system. So we see patients for all sorts of different problems when there is absolutely no other place they feel that they can go.
Mm-hmm. And so the type of problem can run from very, very, very simple problems that a patient has nowhere else that they know to turn to being brought in an emergency situation by a an ambulance or something, helicopter or something like that from an accident.
That's correct. It's a wide range of problems that we see.
And pediatric emergency rooms function pretty much the same way?
We do function a lot the same way. We feel that we have a special niche in the emergency department because we are geared to specifically take care of children and their families. We pride ourselves on family-centered care, just as the pediatrician's offices do. And we feel that it's important to have an environment that is conducive to taking care of children.
Sandra, have you been at other pediatric emergency rooms or facilities in your training?
Yes, I have.
How about you? I said Sandra. I'm sorry. I looked at Holly and made eye contact. Pardon me.
Yes, I have. I worked at one in Boston as well.
So, and Boston's had the unit there probably
did,
for a while.
Yep.
Child life specialists, many of them in that facility?
Yeah, they had three rotating. They were there 24/7.
All right, so let's get the specifics of Providence's children's emergency care unit. What's the age group? What are your hours? How long have you been open? That kind of stuff.
We opened our unit January 9th of this year, and we see patients from birth up to the age of 18 in our unit. Right now, we're open 16 hours a day from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m., and we gauge those hours based on the time of day that the most pediatric patients come into the emergency department where we are. And we have these areas specifically geared and equipped for children.
And Holly, why would you say that we need a pediatric emergency room being a child life specialist?
From my standpoint, I think it's really important to have a place that looks and feels comforting for kids. Walking into your stereotypical hospital environment, the sterile white, has a really scary aspect for kids, especially if they've seen anything on TV and have any sort of idea what a hospital might be portrayed as in the media. Mm-hmm. So having an environment that has some toned down tones and colors, has lighting and features that just make it a little more friendly, already starts lessening the anxiety for patients when they come in and makes my job itself even a little bit easier.
Let me remind listeners real quickly, you're listening to Line One, your health connection in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guests today are Dr. Sandra Horning. She's the medical director of the new Providence Children's Emergency Care Unit at Providence, Alaska Medical Center. And with us also in the studio is child life specialist Holly Legere. If you've got questions or comments, you can call us directly at 550-8433. Toll-free number 1-888-353-5752, and our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. I think sometimes it's hard for parents to put themselves in the frame of mind that particularly toddlers and preschool-age children are when they see things. I think of it when I talk to parents as they're kind of concrete thinkers, and I use the example, if a child is in a room and there's a speaker on the wall and the speaker, somebody down the hall is speaking out of that speaker, the adults know that somebody down the hall is talking, but the kid thinks the wall's talking. Same idea, you go into the hospital and bad things happen and you don't come back out. I don't want to go in that hospital. That kind of makes sense to you?
Yeah, that's a huge part of what we do. My training is a lot in child development, as for all child life specialists, and it's really important for us to look at kids and know where they may be coming from in that aspect. And the number one question I get, I meet a kid first thing when they come in, and they immediately ask me if they're going to get a shot. That's right. What they right. associate with coming into the emergency room, and right. that's not always what happens when you come in.
Right. Sandra, so in the design, were you involved in some of the help with the design of the new Children's Emergency Care Center?
Yes, we had a team that actually mm-hmm. started from the very beginning designing, and we included child life specialists, of course. We included nursing. We included our staff, our HUCs, as we call them, that answer the phones. We even included some families to help us to design this area for children.
Mm-hmm. And the big issue was trying to make it safe, appealing, What are the major thoughts, I guess, that would go into the design of the emergency room for children?
So we wanted to make it safe, absolutely, just mm-hmm. like you said. We wanted to make it family and child friendly. Mm-hmm. For example, we have a very small little toilet just for children in our mm-hmm. bathroom because mm-hmm. toilets can be very scary mm-hmm. for children. We try to look at those kind of aspects. We have a theme of Alaska animals, so that theme runs throughout the area as well.
There are significant traumas that go on, and it seems like to me, and I haven't been in the unit, that you'd want to protect kids from seeing some of that kind of trauma. Is that also part of what happens? Is there some partitioning off even within the children's unit itself?
Yes, we are partitioned off. We're a separate area from the adult side because, mm-hmm. as we all know, there are things that you'd rather your children not see that happen on the adult side. We also have a separate trauma room that we are building and that will be open soon for children, but it is a bit separate from that area so that those two areas don't interact.
Right. The other thought I have is, at least in our office as a pediatrician, I always worry about how adolescents are going to feel. Since you're dealing with birth through 18, was that part of the thought process, and how do you handle that kind of issue?
It was part of our thought process because our age group goes up to age 18. So we tried to make the rooms inviting for that age group as well. And we've included things such as USB ports so that they can charge their phones and still listen to their music and do things that make them more comfortable.
And Holly, are you said you're a child life specialist. Does that include learning how to interact with adolescents who have a different point of view about what goes on in the emergency
room?
It does,
yeah. I work with anybody that we see. And adolescents can have just as much anxiety as a 5-year-old can. So I work to assess every patient that comes through our door, try to help them understand what's going on and have a normalized experience while they're with us.
Mm-hmm. And children, just like adults, also have their own temperaments. They have their own experiences. And so I'm sure part of your training is learning how to interact with families that really come from completely different backgrounds. There are families that, even don't believe in traditional medicine, and yet they may end up in an emergency room, which causes some extra special angst for everybody, I would guess. Again, some particularly, I would think, in the emergency room, you run into a lot of anxiety, perhaps even more than in a private office. We've talked in this program a lot about the mental health aspects of healthcare, and that anxiety seems to drive a lot. So you had the background in psychology, so I suspect all of that means a lot to you.
Yeah. I love working in Anchorage. It's such a diverse place. And we do see families of all different cultures, and it's really interesting to see how we can tailor care to provide the care that they are coming for. Everybody comes in with different expectations to the emergency department, and I think it's our job to deliver the care the best we can to meet their expectations and get their child healthy.
Do you find that the community is really aware of this new facility already? Are you partly, you're here to help everybody hear about it, but is it getting utilized pretty efficiently already?
Yes, I think it's getting utilized efficiently, and yes, we are here to also let people mm-hmm. be aware of what we have to offer to the community, but there's been a good response since we've opened.
What kinds of, I'm assuming that emergency rooms are kind of almost interconnected nationally. You have a good feeling about the kinds of problems that are coming in on a day-to-day basis. Do you mind sharing that kind of information, age, sex, problems, severity, and so forth with us?
Sure. So when you look nationally, and we in our facility see about the same things. The average age of the child that comes into the emergency department in the pediatric section is 7 years of age. They're more likely to be a boy than a girl. And the number one category that we see nationwide and here would be injuries and accidental ingestions, like a child getting into something at home. Second would be respiratory things, such as a cold or cough or pneumonia or wheezing. And then third down the list would be other viral illnesses such as vomiting and diarrhea and those kind of things.
You've been at that job of the emergency room a while, looking at your CV, and I've been in private pediatrics for a long time. Things have changed considerably. You mentioned that injuries are the or unintentional injuries are the top reason for people to be in a pediatric emergency room. And what I often try to remind parents of, and I think I'm pretty right about the statistics, after you hit 1 year of age until you're in your 40s, actually unintentional injuries are the number one reason across all those ages to end up in the emergency room, which is distinctly different from at least the 1980s, where infections were still the biggest cause, I would think.
That's correct. It has changed quite dramatically over time, what we're seeing and the kinds of injuries that we see when children come in.
And my reason for bringing that up is trying to get people to understand that the control of infectious diseases has really changed healthcare. It's one of the chief reasons we're living longer, is we're not dying of these infectious diseases.
That's very true. We've made great strides that way.
So when I was in training, meningitis, epiglottitis, a lot of really nasty illnesses were actually, I would see them a couple times a year. And I haven't seen a case of meningitis myself in private practice now in 10 to 15 years. And I think it's almost entirely due to two of the vaccines that have come out, the pneumococcal and the Hib vaccine. Has that been your experience as well?
Yes, that's been my experience as well. I haven't seen a case of Haemophilus meningitis, that vaccine, in years. And the last time I think that I saw a case of pneumococcal meningitis was about 2 years ago.
The other thing I used to see in training, and what I'm trying to do here is trying to, at the same time, promote what goes on in emergency room, is to make people aware that things are better. I'm in the middle of reading Steve Pinker's Enlightenment now. I don't know if you've read that or are aware of it, but we have a tendency as humans not to be aware of how things have changed. But when I did see accidents in the emergency room or kids in the emergency room, it was drinking old English furniture polish. Remember that. So it turns out that petroleum distillates have very low surface viscosity, and when people put them in their mouths, they aspirate them into the lungs very easily, and you get nasty pneumonias 4 or 5 hours later, is my recollection. And now we have child-proof bottle. I haven't seen that. So that a lot of accidents have decreased, even though accidents now are the leading reason to get in the emergency room. Severe infectious diseases have been controlled even more.
Yes.
What are the accidents that we see?
We see motor vehicle accidents. Mm-hmm. That's probably number one on our list of accidental injuries that we see. Sporting injuries, sports that occur at school, and then sports that are done recreationally. We see those as well. So I think that we have become more of a mobile society, and we have a lot of things that are motorized now, and so we have a lot more injuries of things that have motors, and then you develop much more significant injuries, such as snow machines and things like that, motorcycles.
We also have become a little bit more conscious of head injuries, I guess, is what I'm saying. I was trying to be funny about unconsciousness, but it didn't come out very good. So concussions are a significant issue now. Is that something that ends up in the emergency room quite a bit, or is it more likely to end up in the trainer's table or back in the primary care physician's office?
I think it occurs in all three places, and I think particularly if it's recurrent, we would be more likely to see it in the emergency department because of concerns for our second impact syndrome, where the injuries are cumulative. But I think also a lot of them are seen by trainers, and a lot of them are seen in pediatrics offices.
So now that we've kind of fleshed out a little bit about what's going on, tell us a little bit about the training. And My understanding is there's actually pediatric emergency room physician training, very specific to that, whereas not all emergency room physicians would get that same amount. So would you clarify that issue? And then it gets into the issue, again, of why a pediatric specific care center for emergency problems is can be very helpful.
Yes. So there are now residency programs or training programs for people to just do strictly pediatric emergency medicine. Usually, those will be people who have trained in pediatrics and then go on to do pediatric emergency medicine as a fellowship after that. And a lot of people that with that kind of training are at children's hospitals that are what we call freestanding. Mm-hmm. So the emergency department is with a children's hospital. But more and more of those people with that kind of training are coming out into the community.
Right. Are there other dedicated pediatric emergency care facilities in Alaska, or are you perhaps the only one?
We're the first
In
Alaska to develop a children's emergency care or a presence in the emergency department.
All right. And the providers, Holly, let me kind of get you back in here. Who else is in the emergency room? We've already talked about, I guess, nurses. We've talked about some support staff, physicians and child health specialists. What else is child life specialists? I keep
there
doing
you go.
That, don't I? Who else is dedicated to the emergency room that may make it better?
We have people who sort of come from all over the hospital, our x-ray technicians. The techs from the regular emergency department will come back to the PZD as well. And they all have knowledge when they're coming back to that area that they're going to be working with kids. And I think the people who come back are those who enjoy working with our pediatric patients.
It seems to me that you get good at what you do all the time. And I know having grown up before I went to medical school, even being a lab tech and learning to draw blood, that one of the parents' great concerns is, will this person be able to get blood out of my 18-month-old, rather chubby little kid, and where is the blood, where are the vessels anyway? So some phlebotomists, people who are drawing blood and do it working in the lab and X-ray, really, I think, get pretty good at also handling that anxiety, and that's the advantage of having a pediatric emergency room, again, is they get that practice over and over.
Yeah, and part of our job in child life, I'm not there 24/7, is to help educate the staff as well and what they can do when they're working with these pediatric patients. So we try to provide education where we can so they're equipped when child life isn't around to provide that education and help ease their anxiety too.
How does that happen, the education?
All over the place.
Yeah.
We try to do seminars when we can, just educational packets, a conversation in the hallway, just trying to make everything a little bit easier for kids when they're there.
Mm-hmm. What's the most traumatic thing that's happening in the emergency room to most children, other than their specific injuries? You've already mentioned that they're worried they're going to get a shot. And in their minds, that also, I guess, would include often getting blood drawn.
Yeah. I think overall, it's the lack of control that they experience when they come in. Kids are really looking to control their environment. And the nature of being a child is that usually your parents or an adult is controlling a lot of things around you for you. And in a foreign environment that you don't understand, that just heightens their anxiety that much more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a big part of child life is also to help them find control where they can find it, and offering them opportunities to make choices and trying to help them be in control of their treatment as well.
So just like being at home, offering those choices was one of the strategies I heard you say. So give me an example of how that would work.
Yeah, I try to involve them in the planning of whatever procedure they might be having done. If they're taking medicine, do you want to take it from a syringe or from a cup? If you're having an IV placed, how do you want to be sitting while we're doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Offering them choices where they can make choices. A lot
right.
of things aren't up
right.
for debate when you're in the emergency room,
right.
but there's places that we can offer as much as
right.
we can.
Yeah, that's a very simple thing, but it's, again, a very clear, I think, expose, so to speak, of what's the difference between maybe a standard emergency room where everybody's not geared to children is understanding their frame of mind again and where they're coming from to make that experience much more enjoyable and little less traumatic.
I think Holly is really good at going in to talk to the families and deciding what the best plan will be. And then we talk as a team and we decide what the best way to proceed is. And sometimes we will blow bubbles. Sometimes we paint fingernails and toenails. Sometimes we have them sitting in parents' laps or whatever. And I think that that makes a huge difference in care. And additionally, I think that Holly and Child Life Specialist are really good at helping with calming and sedation, so much so that when they're present, we do not have to use sedation a lot of times to do a CT scan, particularly a CT scan of the head, because with their distraction techniques, we don't have to use any kind of medication at all.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that distraction technique often takes a little bit of prep time getting the families on board with where you're going. I thought your example, so what made me think of the next question when you were talking was, give me a specific. So what happens? Somebody comes in, they are checked into the emergency room, and then when you're available, a child life specialist goes in very, very early and first before the nurse or with the nurse? Or
usually the nurse is the first one in with the patient. And I try to make an assessment even as they're walking down the hallway. How does the child look when they're walking? How does the family present? Are they already anxious being in this area? And based on that, I try to get in as early as I can, usually before the provider, just to let the family know I'm there, maybe provide some coloring or some toys, make it a little bit more of a normal home-feeling environment so the kid has something that makes them feel like they're in a safe place that's for them. Let them know that I'm there to make sure that there's no surprises for them. They're going to know what to expect while they're in the hospital. And from there, I usually let the doctor go in and tell them that we're going to come up with a plan once the doctor assesses too.
You know, another thought that comes to my mind as we listen, as I listen to you talk about that, Holly, is Dr. Horning, the same issues can go on in an adult emergency room. I mean, you have people coming in with extreme anxiety. Their idea of what's going to happen is making things worse. Then, you know, when we don't know what's going to happen, we often exaggerate that. Are emergency rooms becoming more equipped to have staff that even helps the adult-aged patients? We're talking about pediatrics here, but we really need to be, are we thinking about the emotional needs of even adults in the emergency rooms? And I'm asking that as somebody who hasn't been in an emergency room in years, and fortunately not even as a patient.
Well, I know I got a text from my dad recently when he was in the emergency room saying, where's my adult life specialist? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, another reason why we have this ability is, one, we have increasing amounts of knowledge and evidence, but we also have a lot less, we're able to spend much more time on mental health and emotional needs because of the advances in healthcare. But so the same thing is happening in emergency rooms for adults, do you think?
Yes, I think there's a lot more emphasis now on those, mm-hmm. those factors and, mm-hmm. And how we can meet those needs and take care of patients that way, even in the adult population.
Okay. All right, we need to take our typical break here. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. Again, our local number, if you've got questions or comments or experiences you want to share, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll continue our discussion of the Providence Children's Emergency Care Unit and with Dr. Sandra Horning and Dr. Holly Legere, the Child Life Specialist. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
All right. Welcome back. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. And I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today, we're discussing Providence's Children's Emergency Care Unit with Medical Director Dr. Sandra Horning and Child Life Specialist Holly Legere. If you have questions or comments, you can email them to us. We'll be here for the next 25 minutes or so at line1@alaskapublic.org. That's L-I-N-E-O-N-E, line1@alaskapublic.org. And you can also call us locally with questions or comments or want to share experiences at 550-8433. Our toll-free number is also available, 1-888-353-5752. And as usual, remember, if you're listening between 8 and 9 on this Monday evening, you're listening to a taped rebroadcast, and no one will be available to answer questions or calls or take emails. So if you got those questions that you're thinking about or you have experiences, why don't you give us a call now? Again, 550-8433. How many child life specialists are employed now at Providence? And I'm asking that in the sense that it's not just the emergency room that's that might have need.
Yeah, there's six of us on staff right now.
And the primary places that you're working besides the emergency room?
Yeah, we serve the pediatric inpatient unit and the PICU, the pediatric intensive care unit. The NICU, neonatal intensive care unit. We are in the outpatient hemonc clinic and also day surgery.
What is hemonc?
Hematology oncology.
So that's where some of the nasty guys have to visit. People with nasty illnesses, some of the cancers in particular. Mm-hmm. All right. And in those facilities, the child life specialist is trying to improve the quality of the experience.
Yep. We work a lot with helping kids with development when they are in long-term care. There's research showing that if a patient is in the hospital for long periods of time, they may have developmental delays. So we work a lot to help them cope in the situation that they're in, reduce pain, a lot of education and coping skill techniques that we work with as well.
One of the real issues we're still, the big issue we're struggling with in the United States is cost of health care. We've talked about it a number of times compared to other countries. We spend a lot more, and we'd like to think our outcomes are better. And in certain areas, I suspect the emergency room, although I don't know that for a fact, would be one where we're really good. Cancer therapy, we're really good. As we talked about in the break, we're not particularly good at coordinated care, and I want to come back to that. But where I was going, I think, was do we have evidence that a children's facility or in a facility just for emergency care of children can save money? You mentioned that it decreases the need of some sedation issues, so that makes me think it saves money as well as risk. Do we have good information about that?
We do have good information that shows in statistically, if you have an area that's dedicated to the care of children with staff that is familiar with children, there are less tests ordered and there are less expensive procedures done if you have that separate area. And then additionally, we feel that one of our roles is to help a child that may be on the border of needing to be admitted to the hospital not have to be admitted to the hospital. So,
right. Good point. Yeah.
For example, we can give IV fluids for 3 or 4 hours and maybe keep your child out of the hospital or give breathing treatments, and then they'll be able to go home rather than that expensive admission.
And you also mentioned maybe a differences in the amount of treatment and the kinds of lab and ancillary services that might be given. Why might that be? Versus a non-pediatric emergency room?
I think it's your comfort level with children, your comfort level with what is normal for them developmentally and what is not. And when you're unsure, you're going to be very conservative and you're going to go toward more testing.
So quality, access, cost is better. Some of the things we're looking to do.
Yes.
What about this coordination of care issue that I've alluded to? How does the emergency room get involved in that?
So we feel that there is no substitute for a medical home. Everybody needs a medical home. Pediatric patients need it. Adult patients need it. Our coordination with that medical home is really, really important. And we feel that we are a bridge between the office practice, in that we can provide a little bit higher level of care and we can spend more hours of intensive care with that child to potentially keep them from being admitted. Additionally, we can stabilize that critically ill child very quickly if they do need to be admitted, or that very sick child, and get their treatment started. But I think every one of those areas has a place in healthcare, and it's vital that we coordinate with both of those areas. Mm-hmm.
Give me some examples of, or I'm thinking of some of where the coordination and communication, and I think we all can get better than at this, but so something comes to my mind quickly would be somebody who maybe is playing soccer, let's say a teenage girl who suddenly has difficulty breathing and ends up in the emergency room. If there was really good communication between, and I'm talking about an electronic medical records in particular, between that emergency room and a good medical home that's seen her a number of times, it may be quicker to pick up that this is an anxiety issue, what we might call vocal cord dysfunction, which is a classic issue in particularly teenage girls. It often gets misdiagnosed for far, far worse kinds of situations. So is that the kind of examples that you're talking about?
Yes, and I think, two, our focus is on treating the problem at hand, but the larger focus is how to keep that from happening another time, and that coordination is so important.
Mm-hmm. Holly, do you get involved in this, in counseling as a child life specialist with the anxiety issues that, or say counseling children, adolescents that are actually depressed?
So I don't have a counseling degree. I can't really do that, but I can help teach immediate coping skills that they might need in the emergency room and help to educate them on coping skills they might be able to take home and use as well. We do a lot of work on deep breathing, using distraction techniques, just to try to help kids better understand what they're going through, focus on other things, and try to cope with what they're dealing with at hand.
So just modeling, they see, they learn while they're there, techniques that may be able to be used elsewhere.
Yeah.
Would you agree anxiety is a big issue in healthcare?
Yes.
I don't know. It's one of my favorite issues. I always wondered why we don't have a mental health insurance that is at least as good and maybe should be better than our medical health insurance. And I don't know that everybody appreciates that point of view. All right. Another place where this coordination of care can be helpful, and I think we still need to get better at our electronic medical records, is often patients that end up in the emergency room, particularly kids, have got very complex issues, maybe have had heart transplants, maybe have very significant other health concerns involving multiple health organ systems and are on multiple medications. And it can get very difficult, even for me, with a patient I know all the time, to keep track of particularly medication issues and side effects and cross reactions between medications. I know it's not Providence's problem to interact with so we get on the same team with our electronic medical records. Are there things that the pediatric emergency rooms are trying to do across the country now to improve that kind of problem and make it less of an issue?
Yes, I think one of the things that has happened in the state of Alaska is that we have tried to coordinate getting radiological films transmitted back and forth electronically so that children are not exposed over and over again for repetitive films that they've already had because we can't see the ones from there. So that's an example of a methodology that is really working, and that we can pull up films from hospitals all over the state.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. In, you know, even in our office, we can look at x-rays and CTs and stuff. And so now emergency rooms across the country can do that?
So it is developing in the states, and there are places, particularly in the lower 48, where you can go across state lines to look at these films.
What if we mentioned trauma earlier, and there's trauma designations. Help us understand, again, why it's important to have trauma designations. What's different about different emergency room facilities and their ability to cope with different kinds of trauma? Bring us up to date on that and where the Providence Children's Emergency Care Unit fits in that.
So we feel that trauma designations are important because it is an outside agency that comes in to review all of our processes and our care for children and to offer suggestions for improvement. And that's really important because it really makes us at a higher level of care for pediatric patients. So about a year ago, we applied to get a pediatric level 2 trauma designation, which is granted by the American College of Surgeons. And we have to meet certain criteria in many areas and submit an application. And then we have a site review where they review records of cases that we have cared for that were trauma patients, as well as our facilities and everything. And then they give us a final designation, which we achieved. And we're very proud of that because I feel that when you have outside agencies coming in, it really helps you to improve your care.
Right. Another problem with the trauma issue is having the right kind of diagnostic and therapy available quickly, 24 hours a day, and that often gets to staffing issues that people don't understand. And I would think with the trauma stuff, having the right kinds of trauma surgeons available, are we able to do that pretty well now in Anchorage in particular? I'm sure we can't do it throughout the state. But.
Yes, we are. We have a great group of pediatric surgeons, and then we have adult surgeons also who help to participate in the care of the children when it's a severe trauma. So it's really an amazing team that cares for children 24/7.
Another thing that's happening nationally, it seems like that there's much more cross-fertilization networks of emergency rooms. Are there networks of pediatric emergency rooms where they're sharing data and what we're seeing and how fast we're able to respond to certain kinds of problems and where we're lacking in certain care facilities and staffing and so forth. So you can kind of see where you stand versus everybody else.
Yes, there are. And as a matter of fact, we are a member of the Children's Hospital Association pediatric emergency blog and group, and they meet once a year. And then you can go online and say, how do you handle staffing at 2 in the morning? And you get all these answers that come back that are very helpful. And so that interaction and that collaboration is really great.
How many pediatric emergency room physicians do you have?
So right now we have 2.
Okay.
We have a very solid core group of emergency physicians who do a really good job of taking care of children as well. So,
are you using any pediatric nurse clinician specialists or nurse practitioners in the same facility as well?
We have not used nurse practitioners in our emergency department at Providence, Alaska, but other places have used them well.
Holly, what in your mind may still need to be done? And I need to ask Sandra as well. We always need to be pushing ourselves to get better. What do we need? You've been in Boston, all right?
I have.
And so most of us think, well, Boston's a pretty good example of where healthcare ought to be. Not always maybe happens that way, but that's what we think. So what have you seen that you would say, gosh, it'd be nice to be able to do that here? And given the problems with, you know, we're a smaller, 700 and something thousand people in the States. There's that many people well within the reach of certain emergency rooms in Boston without any trouble. So there's all those kind of staffing kinds of problems. But how would you answer that question?
Truthfully, I've been amazingly surprised with how well Alaska is kind of up to par with what I was seeing down in Boston.
Right.
I think maybe the biggest difference is just staffing numbers. You know, all of the staff that was on were specifically pediatric trained, and they only worked in that department, so they really knew the department well. I think staff has done an amazing job accommodating to what we have and working with pediatrics, even if they don't specifically come from that background. But I think that's probably the biggest difference that I've seen.
Dr. Harding, how would you answer the question? What else do we need?
So I think I agree with Holly. I think that we do an amazing job. I think we have to do an amazing job because on a good day, we're a 3.5-hour flight, and that's not even prep time on either side, from the next major pediatric facility. So we really do have to be very good at what we do because of the distances involved. I think that as we evolve and as we develop more staffing and get more of a feel for the pediatric needs in that area, I think that the care will expand and be really good. But I am amazed at how well the unit functions and the staff functions.
How many patients per day are being seen in the right now in the pediatric emergency care unit?
So since we opened on January 9th, we're averaging about 50 patients in that 16-hour period.
What about mental health? It's a big one for me. Alaska is struggling, particularly with the Medicaid patients, where the need for emergency mental, for all kinds of mental health, but particularly mental health, seems to me that we need to be getting better, and I think it gets down to funding. How does the Providence Emergency Children's Emergency Care Unit try to address psychiatric mental health emergencies?
So we try, once again, to have the support systems there for children and their families, because it's very traumatic for families as well to have to go through that. The Providence Hospital has a discovery unit for children. Mm-hmm. And we try very hard to arrange for placement as needed and different facilities in our town that take care of children, and also to make arrangements for outpatient counseling. But I agree it's a challenge. It was a challenge where I worked in the lower 48, and it's a challenge here as well to try to get the best kind of care for these children and for adults as well.
Give me just to kind of flesh out a little bit more what's going on in the emergency care facility, the kinds of specific patients. We've mentioned that injuries, unintentional injuries particularly, are some of the more common things that we're seeing. But maybe flesh out a couple of very specific examples we might can talk about that either one of you all want to mention that you've been involved with recently that helps our listeners understand what's different about a pediatric emergency room.
So we can see a child, for instance, who comes in because they got into medications at grandmother's house, which is the number one place that children get into medications.
At grandmother's?
Yes, because it's on the bedside table and, you know, you forget. And
they may happen to be on more medications.
Right.
Right. Yeah, okay.
And so we talk with poison control and we do the necessary testing, and that child needs to be watched for 4 hours, where there's no reason to have to admit a child for 4 hours. So we watch them in the emergency department for that amount of time, and we have interactions with them and have child life interacting with them. And then when they're medically cleared to go home, they can just go home rather than have to come into the hospital.
What about car accidents? It seemed like that would cause a lot of stress for everybody. You get a phone call that there's been a car accident on the highway going south out of town, which is the one I would think about the most, and there's helicopters heading that way. How do y'all prepare for that? What are the expectations? Do you start setting up individuals, calling in people maybe who aren't there? How does that work?
So, yes, we start mobilizing when we get an idea of what we're dealing with, and people are called in from home depending upon how many people we think are involved. And then Holly gets involved from the very beginning too.
I have a distraction bag that I grab and run with when we hear kids coming in. So that's got tons of toys and items that I can use with the patient. A lot of times I won't know what age. I might just know that there is a child coming. So having a lot of different options is really important. In a very serious trauma situation, my job almost becomes to be the eyes for a patient. A lot of times they're in a position where they can't really see much more than the ceiling above them. So I try to stand by the head, explain what's going on, what doctors, nurses are doing, what they might be feeling, seeing, hearing, maybe even smelling, because they have lost a lot of what they're able to experience in that type of situation.
Mm-hmm. Another kind of trauma that comes to my mind that is perhaps an area that, as I understand it, we still may need to have some help with, because it takes people a while to get out, is significant burns. Tell us about how that may be triaged and what do you do here locally, and then when might it require somebody to go out to another hospital?
So one of the advantages to our pediatric trauma designation is that burn care is part of that whole system and scenario. And our pediatric surgeons care for quite a few pediatric burn patients so that they don't have to leave the state and they can stay here. Only our most severe pediatric patients with burns go down to Harborview, which is our closest burn center. So I would say that the majority of children that we see with burns are able to stay in the state, which is very, very nice for them to be able to do.
The other kind of aspect I guess I should have thought about earlier that it comes up is, what are the kind of long-term consequences, negative consequences of not being able to get in to see the right kind of facility, particularly for children? There can be long-term consequences, which also have some risk and cost. Can you give me examples of something like that that maybe you've had in your experience?
Yeah, so we know if a kid has a really traumatic experience in an emergency department, maybe they were working with people who didn't really know how to work with a child. If they ever have to come back into that environment, they may be brought back to those feelings, those thoughts, and that fear of not knowing what's going to happen, and is the same thing happening to me again? And that creates a difficult situation for staff to work with the patient. They may exhibit different behaviors, throwing tantrums. That anxiety really increases. So being able to treat a patient the way they need to be treated from the get-go can help in future visits too.
Any final thoughts? We're coming up in the last couple of minutes, and I love to end with what do we want our listeners to come away from understanding and knowing and try to remember from the discussion today. Holly, how would you maybe answer that question?
I think that it's just really exciting and important to know that there's a place here in Alaska that is there to treat children's emergencies. And that we're geared toward helping the whole family work together to overcome whatever it is they may be facing.
Sandra, what do you think?
I agree with Holly. I think it's important to know that we have a place here, and we are working very hard to provide the optimal level of care for pediatric patients, and we continue with our certifications, and we continue to up the level of our care for the children of Anchorage and for the state of Alaska.
You said you're open from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. right now, which is the statistically probably the most important time. Can you envision, or have you planned out, can you foresee when it might be a 24-hour facility based on need?
So we're hoping within a year to be able to go to 24/7. It depends upon what our statistics show and the need shows, but optimally, it would be very helpful if we could go to 24/7.
Do we need to have those statistics, or is it also just an issue of being able to find enough staff? I mean, it's I would imagine it's tough to get enough pediatric emergency room physicians even to do it 24 hours. Or am I wrong about that? There's enough of that. We just need to be able to document have the need.
Well, it's a little bit of both. I think Providence has made a commitment to do this, because it takes time to care for these children, and it takes staff, and they've made the commitment to do it, which is, I think, very important. And I think that we also have to have look at our statistics and also, like you said, look at the staffing that we can get.
One more thought before we get off the air, I just want to make sure we keep this in mind, is that how hooked at the waist are you at Providence with children, Seattle Children's, or maybe Portland's Health Science Center? How interactive are these facilities now?
You know, we're very interactive with other facilities, and they have been very helpful to us. They were even helpful to us in managing to get the certificate of need for this area. So there's a lot of collaboration between the two areas.
Well, I want to thank you very much, both Sandra Horning and Holly Legere, the Child Life Specialist, for taking the time to be with us today. And Holly, I would kind of echo what you said. I started this program almost 20 years ago because I thought the quality of health care for a community this size was quite amazing. And I came from a very large inner city training program where I thought I'd seen everything, and I was very much amazed, and it's done nothing but get better. So I agree. I think it's we do provide much, much more higher quality than people think. We're always going to have a little bit problem with some super subspecial problems because of just the volume. But I hope people are aware of that. And I want to thank you both for taking the time to be with us as well as to do what you're doing on a daily basis. I appreciate it. Next week, Line One's going to return. It's going to be hosted by Prentice Pimpernan, and he is going to talk again with Dr. David Burns. And Dr. Burns is a big specialist in depression, and he's going to help us understand where these little negative thoughts we keep talking about ourselves to come from, what the consequences are, and more importantly, what we might do to try to get away from that little negative guy in our brain that keeps talking to us every day. So if you're interested, you might want to join us next Monday, February 12th at 2 p.m. Remember, we repeat each Monday evening at 8 p.m. on FM 91.1, Alaska Public Media. I also want to thank Dave Waldron, who's today's audio engineer, and Eric Bork, who is our web editor. This is Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.